We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Dive into this mailbag because we do have some good questions here. If you have some more questions, let's throw them in there. I have now seen in the chat three different quarterbacks projected to Notre Dame in the portal. So we will have a show on that. We'll have a portal show this week. I'm also going to do an article that's going to sort of be redone every time a quarterback that I like enters the portal. I'm going to look at some guys. I'm going to break them down. Are they good fits or not for Notre Dame? And so I'll probably have that starting tomorrow. And then as new guys hit the portal that I like, we'll add them to it and just kind of
portal report. I like that.
Well, quarterback is the main one. My first article is going to be, here's the needs in the portal. Here's where they need to look. And then I'll kind of, cause quarterback's the big one. If they only get a quarterback in the portal this year and he's a kid that can play.
Yeah.
That's success. Like if give me another, even just another Jack Cohn. Right. And obviously, that's my opinion of Jack Cohn. Right. I mean, other people don't think it's highly of Jack Cohn. I did. And I'll take this to my grave, Ryan. Jack Cohn's not even starting quarterback this year. They're at worst 11-1. Like, that's no disrespect to Drew, but it was a combination of he could run Tommy's offense. He was a veteran. You know, he'd been through all of that stuff. He could have been able to handle some of the tough spots. He showed last year, love Tyler's talent, but Jack makes that fourth quarter throws that Tyler didn't hit because he's done it before. He's been through those battles. He's been through those wars. He missed those throws early in his career, like a lot of young quarterbacks make. And then he learned from it and got better at it. So, but you know, you need to get a guy that can come in and just be a really good player, in my opinion, is the ideal situation. But we're going to discuss that and wrap that up. So Ryan Woolridge says, what happens? Thank you for the super chat, Ryan. He said, what happens if both quarterbacks for the pack get hurt? He's talking about NC State on that one. Ryan, I would love to answer your question, but I'm just not quite sure what you're referring to. I'm going to assume he's talking about NC State because they're down to two quarterbacks, right?
I mean, I guess.
Because MJ Morris was banged up, and then they had the Finley kid
Ben
playing.
Finley. Yeah, Ben Finley.
Yeah, was in the bowl game. I mean, you're going to have to find somebody on your team that can take a snap and hand the ball off. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Yeah. But if you're talking about something else, Ryan, please let me know, and because I want to make sure that I'm answering your question.
I'm sure they have an emergency quarterback ready, somebody that played it in high school. You know?
Most teams do. Yeah, most teams will do that. Good team. Well-coached teams will anyway.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
David Hess with a super chat. I love the heart this team showed. Thank you very much, David, by the way, for your super chat. I really do appreciate that. I love the heart this team showed this year. Here's hoping for that 9th win and onward to next year. Thanks for all the content, guys, at IB. I'm going to say this, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Heart's not enough, right? You got to play well and win games. However, what he's saying here is part of the foundation I'm talking about. Like, there is no spinning that this was a successful season. We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. What this show is about is, in spite of it being a disappointing season, there was a lot of stuff that you can build off of to make you excited for what they're going to do. And what I'm going to bring up after David's question, to tie into David's question, to get mm-hmm. to it, is it's not unheard of for a coach to kind of not do well his first year and then do things really well. And so, but if the heart's not there, if you've got, I've always felt this as a coach, Ryan, and I know you've coached a little bit too. Mm-hmm. If a kid is a hard worker and even sometimes plays too hard or too out of control, or, you know, I can work with that. Mm-hmm. But if I got a kid who doesn't want to work, a kid who doesn't have the right attitude, that's harder to fix. Because that's an inside here problem for that kid that I can't get into that. If mm-hmm. a kid's a hard worker and has the heart, it's like the story I love hearing about Lou Holtz. I think it was after the bowl game. I think if I remember correctly, somebody else might be able to prove me wrong. It was after the bowl game that they lost after the 87 season, I believe, because Notre Dame lost their final three games of the year that year. And there's a story that Lou Holtz came in and he goes in the locker room, and it might've been after the 86, like the last game of the 86 season. I can't quite remember. Some of the others can maybe point that out and help me remember that one. Basically, He walks into the locker room, and there's this one of his players that's in there sobbing after the loss. Mm-hmm. And it was Chris Zorich. Mm. Problem is, Chris Zorich didn't play in the game. But he hurt that much. He loved that team so much that he was just sobbing in the locker room after a loss that he didn't even play in. And he was like, that's the kind of kid I want on my football team. Right? And that's the thing, is if the heart is there, mm-hmm. if the willingness to work is there, we can fix, as a coach, we can fix all the other things looking at it from a coaching standpoint. I can fix the practices. I can work on this. I can improve this. I can make a change here if the foundation is strong. Right. If the willingness to put in the work is there, then care. It's up to me to fix those things. If I have kids that don't want to be here, then you're Texas A&M.
Yep. Or and Miami right now.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's, we never saw that from Notre Dame this year. Mm-hmm. And that's the important. And they had multiple chances to quit. They had multiple chances to have veterans, Isaiah Foskey and Michael Mayer. If they would have, after Stanford, said, I'm done, people wouldn't have liked it, but people would have understood.
Yep.
And not only did they not do that, they doubled down and played their butts off in the next several games. Like, Isaiah Foskey bounced back from what was arguably the worst game of his career with one of the best games of his career the next week, and he was also really good against Clemson the week after that. That tells me something about the heart of him and his football team.
And he played his butt off against USC, man.
Yes.
He played his butt off against USC.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That says something about not only Isaiah Foskey, but where this team is.
And how Michael Mayer improved as a blocker is an example that we've given during the season.
No reason. He had no reason to do so. Nobody in the NFL was going to care much about that.
Nope.
But
he's still going to win the first round.
But he knew it's what he needed to do to win, because this was going to be a running football team. And it says a lot about that. Jarrett Patterson would have had every reason to, and Marcus Freeman said this, to say, hey, I'm not playing. I'm injured. I got too many injuries. I can't do it. But he answered the bell every single game once he came back.
I always point to another good example too, Brian, from Michael Mayer, is it was the Cal game, right? Where Pines airmailed that one where it was wide open.
Oh, the seam route.
Yes. And instead of Michael Mayer going on the sideline and sulking and being to himself and just saying, Drew, you suck, get away from me, he goes right to Drew Pine to pick him up, right? And a lot of pass catchers would have just been like, dude, you suck. Get somebody else in here that can make that throw. And instead, he was the ultimate teammate, the consummate teammate, and was there to pick up his quarterback, which I think I think it speaks volumes to the player. And that was the week after they just lost to Marshall, right? Like, that's – yes.
Yep. Now, that ties into another question that we had down here from Siggy13. And he says, now that the regular season is done, is there a first-year coach in memory from anywhere in football that was similar to Freeman and might give us foresight into where this can go? I'm going to give you a couple polar opposite examples. Mm-hmm. Number one, I think the most direct example is Kirby Smart. Mm. And obviously, his first year at Georgia, they went 8-5. They went 8-4 in the regular – or 7-5 in the regular season. Lost to Ole Miss 45-14, lost at home to Tennessee 34-31, lost to Vanderbilt, lost to Georgia by 2 touchdowns, and then got beat by Georgia Tech at the end of the season. Winner of the bowl game, beat TCU 31-23, and the next year they played for national championship. Beat Notre Dame, played for national championship. Dabo Swinney needed 2 years to really get going. His first year, they went 9-5. His second year, they went 6-7. Third year, they went 10-4. By year four, they were the top 10 team. Back-to-back years. So, I mean, that was a similar example, a little bit different. And then another example, the one that kind of probably means, I think, is probably the most direct to Marcus Freeman based on who he stepped in for. But, you know, he inherited a team at Ohio State that went 8-4, right? Mm-hmm. Lost 4 of their last 7 games to ranked teams, lost to number 16 Purdue, lost to number 19 Michigan, lost to number 14 South Carolina. Lou Holtz coached South Carolina team. And then the next year, Jim Tressel steps in and he goes 7-5, including losing their bowl game. They were 7-4 going into the bowl game and lost a bowl game to South Carolina. And so you go into that and 7-5, that's your, and he was a guy that had experience, but he was at FCS, he was at Youngstown State. Is this really, you know, yeah, they beat Michigan that year, but what do they do the next year, Ryan? They go out and win a national championship and beat one of the greatest collections of talent I've ever seen in my life in that Miami team.
It was ridiculous, man.
You know, and of course,
Frank Gore was like a third string running back on that team.
Exactly. That team, I mean, that team was insane. Like the year before on that team, you had Willis McGahee playing fullback, right? Wasn't DJ Williams a fullback on the team? A guy that eventually became a starting linebacker in the National Football League, was a first round draft pick for the Broncos.
Yeah, he was a stud,
right?
He was a really good linebacker.
He was playing fullback on that team, I believe. But it was about the foundation was laid in year one, the foundation of toughness. You know, what was the big knock on John Cooper? Couldn't win the big game.
Yeah.
Good teams just couldn't win the big game. And that was a knock on Brian Kelly, right? And now John Cooper's records weren't as good as Brian Kelly's because the Big Ten was really good back then. And if you weren't good, you weren't going to go 11-1 against a soft schedule like Brian Kelly had last year. So I think it's one of those things but the foundation was laid during that 7-5 season, Ryan. You know, you look at that team, they had a tough loss at UCLA early in the year. They lost at home to Wisconsin by 3. They lost at to Penn State by 2, lost to Illinois at home by 12, beat Michigan on the road. And then, you know, all the momentum from that game is gone because they lost to South Carolina in a bowl game. But again, they had some really talented young players and he laid a foundation of toughness. This is how we're going to compete. And he didn't waver from that. And then the next year, with some tweaks, they went out and won a national championship. Now, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but there are plenty of examples of that happening in college football. Yeah. And I'm sure if I spent 10 minutes, I could think of more. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's clearly more. I mean, it didn't take Nick Saban very long to get that Alabama team turned around, but what – he was willing to sacrifice losing to Lees and Monroe because he was trying to do something bigger than right now. And I think that's the part that we talked about earlier that was so important is Marcus Freeman probably could have made some tweaks to this team that might have actually allowed them to score a little more or make a few more stops, but they'd have been short-term fixes. And they would have just masked the problems that existed. But he didn't do that. He said, no, we're doing something bigger. Our season's already – I mean, we're not playing for a championship. That's been done since September 10th. So now it's about we're building for the future with while also trying to win all the games this year. I'm not saying they sacrifice wins this year. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is he wasn't willing to sacrifice this is who we're going to be right. for short-term success. And there's going to be some bumps in the road. And that's something that I think was smart. And that's something that his mentor did there. And Lou Holtz is similar. And Lou Holtz went 5-6 in his first year. And the next year, Notre Dame comes out and started really, really well. You know, I think they started, if I remember correctly, Ryan, I think they started 8-0, I believe, in 87. No, 8-1. They were 8-1. They lost at Pittsburgh, but they beat number 9 Michigan on the road. They beat number 17 Michigan State. I'm saying this one for Ladarius's, for his benefit. They beat number 10 Alabama 37-6, and they climbed all the way up to number 7 that next year, and then they lost their next 3 games. And Lou Holtz never wavered from his foundation, but he said, I'm going to find people that want to be here. He right. didn't change. He said, no, no, this is who we are. And if you don't want to be here, go somewhere else. Because the guys that I'm playing next year are the guys who are going to believe, do what we were saying to do. And that's what I felt like we saw go happen this year at Notre Dame.
Yep.
Is that. And that's what we're going to see this offseason. There's going to be some heart-to-hearts with kids saying, hey, if you don't want to buy into this, I love you and appreciate everything you've done, but this isn't the place for you. And I think that's one of the other things that has me kind of optimistic about what's the future holds. Great. Got a couple more here, Ryan, or several more here. Kuba Puig, the cut is smooth, BD. Thank you very much. Somebody asked earlier also if this is here it is from and thank you for the super chat, Kuba. I appreciate that. Austin Schaumburg said, is your hair always that short, or am I thrown off by you not having a hat on? My hair's always this short, except when I go a month without cutting it, it gets longer, but I've had this pretty much this haircut since I was like 16 years old. A couple times I let my hair grow out and I just got kind of combed it over, but I was like, I hate this. I don't like having hair. I just like the tight fade and good to go. And the best part about this is it's free. So, you know, so there's that too.
Haircuts are expensive, man. I got one last week. That was like exactly. $21. So
mine costs is time. All right. So, yes, that's absolutely. So I appreciate the everybody noticing and I knew it was going to happen too. We talked about that, but I appreciate that. And I love it. It's great. Michael S. with a super chat. Why couldn't Notre Dame run the ball or stop the run at USC? We kind of talked about that in the post game show. Why couldn't they run the ball? USC was basically going to say, we're going to outnumber you and out leverage you and make it hard on you. And Notre Dame could have pounded their head against the wall and tried to run the ball into outnumbered boxes, or they could have said, let's rip them up with the pass game. And that's exactly what they did. They just
was it 318 yards, right? Or whatever it was.
23 of 26.
Yeah.
So now it wasn't good enough, mainly because the second part they couldn't do. Why? Yeah. That's a long conversation. There's a lot of different reasons. The scheme wasn't good. Linebacker play wasn't good. All the stuff we talked about in the post game show was a bad plan. And that bad plan wasn't executed well. That's a bad combination. Real bad combination. And at times, USC's kids made some really good plays. I mean, that's part of it too, but it's not the only reason that they didn't have success.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to give them part credit, right? Andrew Voorhees is a good football player. Austin Jones is a good football player. But Notre Dame made them look like elite football players, right? And that just can't happen. Just can't happen.
Yep. Next one here is from we actually already got to that one. This is from Ryan Elliott. Brian, thoughts on a possible LSU matchup? They're probably going to be ranked too high. But I think that would be a huge draw. Well, I mean, it'd be a huge draw. I don't know if it's possible based on if USC loses this weekend, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Alabama gets into the playoff, which I think is insanely stupid. But at the same time, who are you going to take? Ohio State, who just got curb stomped by Michigan? I mean, it's everyone that's arguing for an expanded playoff, like this is not the year for you to be banging that drum. Because you're going to have trouble getting 4 good teams into the playoff this year, much less 8 or 12. You know what I mean? Like, there's like 3 teams that are deserving of playoff berths right now. With all due respect to USC, they earned the 4 spot for now, but this USC team would get destroyed by almost every playoff team that I've seen going back up until Michigan State in 2016. That's probably the last playoff team I've seen that wouldn't whoop this Michigan team, in my opinion. This USC team. With all due respect, including the last 2 Notre Dame teams that made the playoff, would beat this USC team, in my opinion. So anyway, that's a different conversation for a different day. But yes, LSU would be a huge draw. I think it's a favorable matchup for Notre Dame. I won't spend too much time on it just because if it is the matchup, we'll have plenty of time to talk about it. But that's not a matchup that would scare me. It's not. First of all, I don't know. But here's the thing too, Ryan, is part of the reason I don't want to talk too much about the bowl game yet is I don't know who's going to be playing, who they're going to be playing, and then who's going to be playing for either of those two teams.
Team. Right, right.
Yep. You know, so it's just a little too early for that. But I just in big picture, Ryan, to address you, I would love an LSU matchup in a bowl game. I would love it.
For sure, for sure. And Notre Dame's had pretty good success against LSU in bowl games. So
that's right.
Yep.
Bob Kosky, thank you, Bob. Brian and Ryan, what are your thoughts on Tommy Rees? Do you cats believe he deserves another year, or do you think Freeman should let him go? We have no opinion on that we care to share. That's not our call. Yeah. There's really nothing that positive that comes from us weighing in on that, and that's just not what we do. I've said this before, Bob, on the website. I'll just make it clear here. As a former coach, I don't find it appropriate or right for me to go out there and say coaches should be fired for reasons other than, like, I had no problem saying Scott Frost needed to go because it wasn't about football, why I thought he needed to be fired. It was other stuff. Mm-hmm. I have no problem criticizing the hire of Hugh Freeze. I'm all for second chances, but sometimes for, like, people think that forgiveness means, okay, you can go right back to the job you had, right? Like, no, I can forgive you for your transgression, but that doesn't mean I'm going to trust you again and then hire you again. Right. I mean,
he even got a better job technically, which is wild.
Yeah. you know, but it doesn't matter what we think about it.
Yeah.
We're going to evaluate the job that Coach Rees did. We'll evaluate the job and the expectations for what he needs to do. What does he get better at if Coach Freeman keeps him, which I fully anticipate Tommy Rees being the offensive coordinator next year. I don't think Marcus Freeman's going to go shake up his staff too much. And I kind of understand it, Ryan. Like, look, you went through a bit of a crazy year. You're all kind of learning to there's some good things and some bad things. You know, for the most part, I need you to make this change. I need you to make this change. As long as you're cool with that, let's roll. Let's roll together and move forward. But, you know, will that be the case? I have no idea. I anticipate him being back. And it's going to then be about, okay, what does Tommy Rees need to do to get this team to maximize his potential in offense? That's what we're going to focus our time on. And I don't mean – and I'm – Bob, your question's fine. And I hope when people ask this and we say we're not answering it, I'm not mad about it being answered. I asked. I completely understand where y'all are coming from with all of this. It's natural. It's just that's not something I'm comfortable doing, and it's not something that I want on my channel. And so – everyone has been made aware that that's not what we're speaking on. Mm-hmm. And we'll address the decisions that are made and the coaches that are on staff.
I want what's best for the program. So whether Tommy Rees is a part of that or he isn't, we'll talk about if he is a part of the solution, if he's not a part of the solution, and our conversation will come from there. Right. But ultimately the bottom line, and I've never steered away from this fact, is that I'm a fan of Notre Dame football. Right. And I want Notre Dame football to be very successful. And I will lay out, just as Brian just stated, what I think they need to best do with whoever is the coach, whoever is the coordinator, whatever players on the field, what I feel like they need to do to make them the best possible product that they can to get back to where they need to go. That's the point blank to it. So that's I agree, because, look, we all are professional in something, right, in different avenues. And I don't think anybody would appreciate anyone saying that we should get fired for them.
Well, I've had people say that to me on Twitter, and I don't care much for it. Yes. Or at least I used to not. I don't care anymore. I mean, I'm not going to fire myself. So, but the other thing, too, it does –
if you tried firing yourself, that'd be pretty hysterical.
Yeah.
I could just imagine you, like, looking in the mirror, like, Brian, we need to have a conversation. Can you just sit down?
Like, yeah. And then I start, like, yeah. If I start doing that, then you need to call someone.
I'll give you an Irish breakdown straight jacket.
I would need some help there. The other thing, too, in all seriousness, too, Ryan, is it doesn't matter what we think. Like, Jack Swarbrick's not sitting at his desk. Like, come on, Driscoll, answer the dang question. I need to know what to do. You know, Marcus Freeman's not sitting at his desk being like, man, has Driscoll weighed in on what I should do at the offensive coordinator or not? Like, maybe I should call him and ask him what he thinks. I promise you that's not happening. And so it doesn't matter. And so then what if I sit here today and say, one of two. I'm going to say one of two things because then people take it the wrong way if I say one. What if I say, you know what, he needs to move on from Tommy Rees? And then he doesn't. And then I have to then work with this coaching staff to try to get intel or get scoop. And or if I say he should be fired and then I'm critical of Tommy Rees next year, it's going to be, well, you only think that because you don't think he should be here. You don't like him. You're a hater, whatever the case may be. Right. Then the flip side is, what if I say, nope, Marcus Freeman needs to come back or bring Tommy Rees back. No doubt about it. Absolutely. And then he doesn't. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Then he hires someone else. And let's say I don't like that hire. Oh, you're just saying that because you were Tommy's boy or you didn't think he should. So it doesn't matter what I say. And it's going to be harder for me to be perceived as objective if I've weighed in on what he should do, if I have a negative reaction to what he does. And so since my opinion doesn't matter, I mean, because if my opinion mattered, Brian Kelly wouldn't have been brought back after 2016. So clearly they're not listening to me at Notre Dame, right? And a lot of Brian Kelly's hires would have been different if it was up to me. So it just doesn't matter. I'm going to evaluate the coaches that are here and the decisions that Marcus Freeman makes. It's up to him, and he gets paid a lot more than I make to make those decisions. And that's kind of where I'm at. So, yeah, that's where I'm at on that one. And I know not everyone's going to agree with that, and I understand, and I respect it. I respect your disagreement. I'm just telling you where I'm at on that one. Let's see here, Ryan. This is an interesting one. I want to get your thoughts on this from Brent Smith. I'll give my short answer, and then you can follow up. Brian and Ryan, do you believe next year there'll be less substitution at the safety position? Yes, but partly because if everyone's healthy. Yes. If not, no. Part of the rotation this year was about health, but there will always be a rotation of safety. They will always play at least three safeties every game.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the names that are going to be potentially in the room next year, which will be interesting, right? Like, you'll have Xavier Watts coming back. I know Justin Walters is still on the roster. You'll have Peyton Bowen coming in. You'll have a Don Schuler coming in, Ramon Henderson. You'll have Ben Minich coming in. So I'm interested to see how much that freshman class is able to capitalize on playing time, Brian, because I know we talked about this a lot, right? Like, I expect Peyton Bowen, if he's a part of the class, to have a significant role next year. But I wouldn't be shocked if a Don Schuler is too good to keep off the field in some capacity, right? But I mean, to your point, I don't think that the safety room is going to be incredibly deep from a experience level next year. I mean, like, you're going to have Ramon back. You're going to have Xavier back that have played a decent amount of football. Maybe Brandon Joseph, although I don't really anticipate that one as we're kind of currently sitting. So I don't think there's a lot of depth from a veteran perspective next year, but it'll be interesting to see how the freshmen are able to kind of crack into the rotation next year. That'll be kind of the, because I mean, what if Peyton Bowen and Don Schuler are just too good to keep off the field, you know? And then you start mixing it up with the Ramon Hendersons, the Xavier Wattses, then that kind of changes my answer a little bit, right? Like, that's then that gets a little different. But
Jason Sexton asks, Brian and Ryan, when was the last time Notre Dame had such a gap closing quarterback room if you include the 23 class? Well, I mean, honestly, the 2018 starting lineup was really flipping good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, Notre Dame had arguably the best cornerback, one of the best cornerback rooms in the country that year, if you look at the starters. Now, the problem was because Dante Vaughn was hurt that year, never was 100%, when you lost one of the starters, there was a big drop-off because of Dante's injury. And then after Dante, there wasn't a whole lot. It was like freshman Tariq Bracey, who was, you know, good at times, but he was not the guy you wanted to be playing against Clemson's Giants, right? But that cornerback room was really good. That cornerback room was as good as anybody. And that's part of the reason that Clemson felt so confident they were going to win the title after they beat Notre Dame, because they were not at all worried about Clemson's defense compared to Notre Dame's that year.
Right.
And so, but the depth is the thing. And so, look, next year's cornerback tandem, if Cam Hart comes back, if he comes back, I think could be every bit as good, if not bigger, better than the 2018 group.
Definitely bigger.
Yeah.
Definitely bigger.
I think it can be better.
Yeah.
Now, if here's the thing, if everybody pans out, Jason, that's the key, is like, what if these guys don't pan out? if everybody pans out and Jaden Mickey's as good as we think and Christian Gray's as good as we think and Micah Bell, you have to kind of go back to the early 90s when Notre Dame was putting out first and second round draft picks every year in the secondary. I mean, Jeff Burris, Tom Carter, Bobby Taylor, Willie Clark. I mean, they were putting out high draft picks nonstop. And that's kind of where I think it can get to, at least at corner. Safety, you're going to need another good year to back up this. It's a great – I mean, there's not a better safety group in the country, in my opinion, than the one they have now. But it's needed because it's
thin right now.
Yeah. And you need to follow it up with another really good safety class, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Or a deep corner class that has kids that can then move to safety. Like, if let's say they sign three corners again in 2024, and, you know, there's a couple kids that are on the board that, like, if the kid doesn't stick at corner, could be a really good cover safety, then do that at least. But they need to get more kids that have safety potential, in my opinion.
Agree.
All right, let's get to some more here. Jonathan Gabrick. And we have a basketball question we're going to get to here in a second as well. But he said, Hudson Carr to the portal. Could another failed Longhorn quarterback end up in Nebraska? First of all, I do not consider Hudson Carr a failed quarterback.
He played pretty well in the limited time he had this year. So, yeah.
I think he threw for over 300 yards in the last game he started. Look, there was no way in heck that they were not going to start Quinn Ewers this year.
Even though everything I heard, Hudson Card was better in the preseason than Quinn Ewers. Yeah. But
a lot of people have argued that he outplayed, but you can't not start him for some legitimate reasons, some not very legitimate reasons.
Sure.
But that's just part of the deal in the modern era, right? Uh-huh. And look, so does that mean that Joe Burrow was a failed Ohio State quarterback? You know what I mean? So he is not Casey Thompson. I mean,
no, that's much just more talented than Casey Thompson. Yeah.
Now, when I look at Hudson Card, he's one of several kids that I'll look at and one of several kids that I'll talk about. You know, the reports came out during the show that he was going to be in the portal. That's not unexpected. I also know that there are conversations that have been had with, you know, if you jump in the portal, there'd be some interest. I believe that to be the case as well. But Notre Dame's got to be real careful with that. You can't reach out to kids. Doesn't mean people can't call you or reach out to sources that you know. But I think Notre Dame would look at him as one of several kids to look at. So I consider him? Yes. Would he be my definitely that guy's the guy that I want? I'm not there yet. There are several kids that I like.
I mean, we're obviously still doing our homework on guys that could potentially be in the portal, because there's a lot of guys right now that you're hearing also that aren't in the portal, right? So, like, until they get in, why are you going to study them just in case they don't enter the portal type of thing? But to the question, though, Jonathan, I also do push back against the failed Longhorn quarterback. Yeah. I think that's unfair to him, because I watched the West Virginia game on the coach's film, and I thought Hudson Card looked very good in that football game.
He did some good things in the Texas Tech game. They lost as well. They couldn't run the ball. Yeah. Once they got a big lead, they couldn't run the ball.
And I actually thought he had some decent moments since Alabama as well. Yeah. I don't think it was like this, like, fall off the face of the earth type of conversation. Right. But yeah, I mean, but to the question, Hudson Card is talented enough where I am definitely giving him a look. There's no doubt about it. Is he the guy ultimately? I have no idea. I don't know who else in the portal yet.
He's one of my favorites that's in the portal now. Oh, like, if no one new enters the portal, he'd probably be my top guy over Cade McNamara. But there's some other guys that we're hearing might jump in the portal that would probably move ahead of him, in my opinion. But we'll see. We'll see. By the way, Ryan, during the show, did you see that the reports now are that Brent Key is going to become the permanent coach at Georgia Tech, which might shake up some things here a little bit. Brent Key, who was the interim coach at Georgia Tech. He was their O-line coach. Promoting the interim coach to the head coach at Georgia Tech. Yeah. So
I don't know anything about him, but that's weird.
But based on an earlier conversation, that's interesting, you know, if other things happen. So we'll see. Jonathan Gabrick also was talking about the basketball team. He said, I was talking to Ladarius, asking about the basketball team. We are 5-1. They just lost to St. Bonaventure. Such a bad loss. But Bray only uses a 5-man rotation. Occasionally will rotate in one bench player. He refuses to play young talent unless he's forced to. We get gassed in the second half. A lot of that's correct. And as far as Bray has always been notorious for playing short benches. But the only reason he played only six guys in the most recent game is because Marcus Hammond, the transfer from Niagara, is still hurt. When Marcus Hammond comes back in, immediately the bench goes to seven. And the other one too is Dom Campbell, the freshman big man, was playing, but he got hurt as well. He should be back soon. Once Dom Campbell and Marcus Hammond come back, you're going to see an 8-man rotation, which is deep for Bray, because also you have you have the current starters and all that kind of stuff. So did that just happen? Let's see here. I just want to see if that happened or not. Did he announce it? Give me 1 second. Hold on a second.
Is there breaking news on the podcast right now?
Maybe, but I'm trying to find it here. Doesn't look like – where'd that go? Where did it go? So, nope, it's not. So he it's a retweet. So I'm glad that I made sure I checked on that real quick. So anyway.
Nothing, guys. Nothing happened.
Yeah, false alarm. Anyway, but the thing is there's two guys that are hurt. Two guys that are hurt for Notre Dame right now that will be part of the rotation, including a transfer that was an 18-point all first team, all MAA. I always want to say the MAC, but it's not that MAC. It's the other MAC, the 2A MAC in Marcus Hammond. So, and then, of course, this year, all three freshmen are going to be part of the rotation this year. J.J. Starling is starting. Then Lubin Allen is playing a ton. He was their leading. He had a double-double in the most recent game. And as I mentioned before, Dom Campbell will play a lot when he gets back from health. He was playing before he got hurt. So, but yes, it is maddening how thin Bray's bench is. It really is. And how he never has full scholarships at basketball. It's maddening. But I just wanted to clarify that little tidbit there. Gavin Harden, I'm gonna leave this one to you, Ryan. What's keeping Notre Dame from moving Maris Lufau to Viper full time since he plays better just going forward?
I mean, Gavin, it would be something that I would entertain, right? I think that the thing with this year is, if you go back to 2020, I felt like there was a lot of good signs for Marist, right? Like, was he always sure of what he saw? Absolutely not. But I mean, I remember watching the Alabama game from 2020 where I was just like, Maris Lufau was one of the few players defensively that I would say looked like he wasn't on a different planet from Alabama that day, right? Like, he was moving, he was playing physically. Unfortunately, he gets hurt in 2021 and just doesn't look, I mean, he didn't take the maturation from a processing perspective that you would have liked, right? Like, he's just out there, and I'll be very honest, right? Like, Maris Lufau is running very aimlessly on the football field at times. And there's a lot of reps where I'm just like, I don't understand exactly what he's looking at. I don't understand what his key is. I'm very confused on what this step there is. But for this offseason, if Maris Lufau comes back, it would definitely be something that I would entertain, because he won't be a full-time Viper. Because, I mean, what's he, 235 pounds, right? So he's not going to play on the edge every rep. But is there a role that Maris Lufau can play at Viper next year? I think so. I definitely think so.
Let me ask you this question, Ryan. Mm-hmm. What would you think if Notre Dame decided they want to go to like a 3-3 look, where they kind of used him as a sort of a rush player that would also drop into the flats and do some of that hook curl stuff?
I'd be okay with it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then not have a Viper, so to speak. I mean, because the point being, if they're going to play him as a full-time Viper, you have to change how you use your Viper.
Agreed.
You know, now what Freeman did at Cincinnati would fit a lot better to that. And is kind of my point. Not what he's doing now. I personally like more of a four down, so I wouldn't want to see that.
Yeah.
But I think that would have to be it. But look, he'll play a ton in the nickel. I think there's a role for him at Viper, especially against certain teams. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing too, honestly, is I know we're all frustrated by Maris Lufau, but I still would say when he was right late in the year, to your point, Ryan, he was pretty good. So how about they figure out why we didn't see that more?
Why and fix that games and not
instead of just, you know, toss them to the side. I think that to me is my bigger concern. And if you figure things out and you've got to go a different direction, then, sure. We'll go there.
And if he doesn't develop in the offseason, then it's an easy conversation, right?
Right.
But at this point, Maris Lufau is still a really talented athlete. He is. So I would still try to find some way to utilize his strengths, whether that is at Viper, whether that is maturing as a Will linebacker, whether that is playing maybe a little bit out in space a little bit more, almost in a rover role where you kind of use him more in a downhill capacity. Like, there's I still think there's ways that you can use Maris Loithau. It's just, unfortunately, it was very uneven this year at Will, but I still think there's, I wouldn't just throw him aside. I would still try to figure out a role that would best accentuate his strengths, because I think he's too good of an athlete not to work with him. I really do.
Right. Next question here from Coleman Smith. Hypothetically, if Al Golden out of the blue takes another job, who would be your top names to replace him as a DC linebacker coach? I have one name for sure that I like, and I know you have a name that you like, and I'll just say those in this hypothetical. If Al Golden were to take another job, my first phone call is probably to Joe Rossi at Minnesota.
He's very good.
And he's a guy, he's got some Notre Dame. I mean, he would be very interested in that job. And he did a phenomenal job this year at Minnesota.
Yes, the last couple years.
Yes.
The last couple years.
Yes. And he's a Western PA guy. He would fit at Notre Dame. I'll just leave it at that. He would fit very well at Notre Dame. That'd probably be my first call, mainly because I don't know a lot about the guy you're about to talk about, Ryan.
Who's that, Jim Leonard?
No. The dude from Illinois, I thought, would be your first guy.
Oh, Ryan Walters. Yeah. Ryan Walters is a really talented guy as well. You know, the Big Ten has a few of those guys, Brian, honestly, now that I think
My only concern with Jim Leonard is I think he's a very good defensive coordinator, but he has no reputation as a recruiter. Like, and it's, I mean, well, because he just doesn't, from everything I've heard from some people with connections, he just doesn't, he doesn't recruit hard. And is he so much better of a coordinator than the other guys that you can get away with that? No. I mean, with all due respect, Joe Rossi's defense was better than his this year. You know what I mean? So that's kind of you know where I'm at. So
yeah. Well, Ryan Walters is going to be the big name on the market for defensive coordinator if for teams that are looking, in my opinion. I mean, he's got I thought he was pretty good over the last couple years, but this year, I mean, Illinois has just been on a different level. They play a lot of multiple fronts. They play a lot of three down. They have some 3-4 elements to their scheme, but they're a team that's pretty really disciplined team. He doesn't blitz a ton on the second level, which is interesting, but he plays a lot of man coverage, a lot of single high stuff. I really like Ryan Walters from Illinois a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would definitely be on the short list if that possibility did come open, excuse me.
Yeah. There's some really good Midwestern defensive coordinators that you could look at. I think the shine is a little bit off the coach at BC. He was supposedly a finalist for the job last year. Is that
Lacuba?
Tim. Yeah. I did not like the job they did this year. Mm-hmm. It just didn't adjust, you know, to what their personnel was. I didn't love that job.
Who's the Purdue's defensive coordinator? Because they had a nice year defensively.
Yeah. And despite losing guys. I mean, that was the crazy thing.
Losing a first-round defensive lineman, you got better somehow.
Yeah. Then they lose their top corner from last year as well. I thought I remember that. Ron English, so hard pass.
I didn't know it was Ron English.
Yeah, he's co-coordinators. That's another thing I wouldn't be – look, I wouldn't mind calling in somebody that's going to be your primary defensive coordinator, but then maybe naming, like, Mike Mickens as your defensive coordinator or pass game coordinator, because – you're going to need to start doing things to make sure you have him locked down because he keeps recruiting and doing what he's doing right now at corner. He's going to be a hot commodity for some people. And I want to make sure. And I'm not saying he is going anywhere. I mean, people want our opinion. Then when we get our opinion, they run with it and say, oh, they were saying this guy's looking around or whatever. I'm just saying hypothetically, I feel how it all works that people are going to really be making it. I mean, if you can turn Notre Dame's cornerback room into a strength, that's not an easy thing to do. That's not an easy thing to do at all. Was there Johnny more, from the boot?
Was there more massive news that just came up? Not for Notre Dame, but for another thing. I'm going to look it up and try to find it.
Yeah.
My bad. Go ahead.
It's all good. So not for Notre Dame. Yeah. So then I'll go to the next question. So Johnny from the boot. So is Notre Dame looking for any transfer portal players? Are there any players that you would be excited for that may or may not be in the portal? Number one, I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about guys in the port that aren't in the portal. You know, I may mention some names here or there, but overall, just not really wanting to go there a whole lot. The three positions, and we'll talk about this moving forward, is Viper, receiver, and then quarterback are the top one. And receiver, honestly, Ryan, if they get Caleb Smith and Lorenzo Styles comes back to Notre Dame, I don't know if I'd go to the portal for a receiver. I really don't, because you'd have the three sophomores, Tobias Merriweather. You'd have five, the five incoming kids. I would honestly, if I had that extra scholarship, I'd honestly consider bringing Matt Salerno back for another year, as long as the promise is, or the understanding is that this is a depth thing. You're not going to play a ton. You know what I mean? Good special teams kid, good leadership. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I don't know if I'd go to the portal. I want to develop the young kids because there's a lot of talent in that young group, especially if if Lorenzo leaves, then I think you need to go to the portal to get somebody that's got some experience.
Yes.
The alternative is if there's a stud receiver that wants to come, okay, well, yeah, then you take him. Mm-hmm. If Dante Thornton wants to come, I'm having that conversation with him. I don't know if I definitely would take him because, you know, him and Tobias are very similar, but I would have that conversation. But we'll that's going to kind of be the topic of tomorrow's show. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more about this. And that's what Savage Science Fitness's question was. Hey, Ryan and Brian, do you think we could land that wideout from Oregon who would love your opinion? That's referring to Dante Thornton. Now, Notre Dame recruited Dante Thornton coming out of high school.
I don't know much about him.
Yeah, very tall, long, stretch the field kind of guy. Played some for them this year. I'm looking up his numbers. Yeah, it's like 17 catches for almost 400 yards. Just give me a second to look up his numbers here real fast. I liked him a lot coming out of high school.
Why is he transferring?
I don't know.
That's weird.
Well, their OC just left, and they've got a pretty deep young receiving core. Mm-hmm. But and his style doesn't really fit what they're doing. They want the shorter, you know, and he's a tall, long, vertical guy, and he's a DC Maryland kid, so he's far away from home. And that glitz and glamour works great till you have to live in that every single day. But he had 17 catches for 366 yards and a touchdown. He's a talented kid. My only thing would be, and he had four catches for 151 yards against Utah. Had one catch for 46 yards and a touchdown against Washington. But he's real similar to what Tobias is and what and kind of Deion. And I mean, Deion and Tobias are all kind of similar players. So, you know, I think I'd want a little bit need of a different type of guy maybe. But that's my gut reaction to it, honestly. Sure. But that's also partly because I don't think Dante would look at Notre Dame. But if Dante was I'll just end, Ryan, I'd make the call. He's a talented kid. I'd make the call.
Yep.
Would he definitely be the guy that I take? I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I love it. And it's not because of his ability. Part of doing this, Ryan, is not just saying, let's go get the best receiver out there. He's got to fit your room.
Sure.
He's got to meet a need that you don't have. And I don't think Dante necessarily meets a need that they don't have right now, in my opinion. But it comes, well, you can't have enough big-time playmakers. And I'm like, yeah, that's also true.
That's also true.
Yeah. So, yep, that's kind of where I'm at on that. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I feel similarly because, I mean, if you got a kid like that that is, you know, going to get immediate playing time, then you're taking Deion Colsey or Tobias Merriweather off the field, right? Like, I agree. I think that there have been a couple like slot options that have gone into the portal that if I was Notre Dame and, you know, you needed kind of that different type of player, I would take a deep look at, to your point. But yeah, I mean, if he's too similar to the Tobiases and the Deions of the world, then that's kind of, it's counterproductive to developing those guys that you already had on your roster that you've already put time into over the last year or two. Yep. Right. So yeah.
Yep. Agree. John Bertucci, with a super chat. Thank you, John, very much. I'm assuming Mayer is out for the bowl. What do you want to see from the O if he sits in the bowl? Who needs to step up? Can Pine win without Mayer? A couple quick things. Michael Mayer has not announced he's not playing in the bowl game. I would guess, it's 100% a guess that he wouldn't play. But knowing Michael Mayer, I don't think it's going to be an easy decision for him, to be honest with you. And I think part of it might depend on who they play. But I would, if I was advising him, I'd tell him not to play. I don't like sitting out the bowl game. That's not my thing. I think you should see it through, but that's not the reality of the universe we live in. If football was the way that I wanted it to be, you play in every game your team plays, but it's not how football is. Michael Mayer has given you everything he has, And I would hate to see him go into a bowl game and get undercut by some DB who doesn't want to get run over by him and his knee gets torn up. I would hate that. If he wants to play, if he wants to play, I'll play him, Ryan. But I would understand. And if I was on his side and I was his parent or his advisor, I'd tell him not to play. Same if I was here. A coach of Notre Dame, I'd say we'd love to have you play because we think we can win with you.
Yeah, if I, especially if, I mean, if I'm his advisor, if I'm the agent that's going to represent him, like that would just, yeah, that would be a decision that you would have to sit down and have a long talk. But I mean, Brian, unfortunately, we have seen that situation, right? Like you saw Jalen mm-hmm. Smith, you saw Jake Butt a couple years ago in the bowl game, yeah. got hurt himself. Matt Corral last year got banged yeah. up in the bowl game. Like
it's now, of course, those are the examples we're going to point to, but yes. more players have not gotten hurt.
Sure.
That yeah. have, but yep. it's enough. And Jake Butt's, and Jalen Smith were never the same guys. They were never the same athletes after that. Jake Butt was no. never able to recover from that injury.
Jalen Smith really did good to a degree,
but yeah. not, he was never the same guy,
yep.
you know? Yeah. I addressed this already in a show, Ryan, or on the board, Ryan. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. Who would you rather play from Mike Ganocci? I hope I'm saying that correctly, Michael. Who would you rather play in a bowl game, South Carolina or Mississippi? Now, this comes from our bowl projections yesterday. The Gator Bowl is where most people are projecting Notre Dame to play either South Carolina or Mississippi State. Who would you rather play?
We talked about it a little bit yesterday. Me and Sean were actually split on this one, Brian. I would actually rather play South Carolina, personally. One is because that Mississippi State offense I hate with a dying passion, right? And it's almost like the – reverse triple option, and it's like one of those things where like it's just so annoying to defend. And then also South Carolina's coming in pretty hot, man. They just beat Tennessee a couple weeks ago. They have the big win against Clemson this past week. I think that you are going, I think you'd be taking on a South Carolina team that seems to be going in a really good direction, you know. So I'd rather take them on because I think that does a little bit more for you to say that you beat a team that just beat Tennessee and Clemson back-to-back weeks,
right,
to end your season. I think that right. gives you a little bit more lore than playing a Mississippi State team that is very gimmicky team, in my opinion.
And a really good defense, by the way, mm-hmm. really yeah. good defense, mm-hmm. very underrated defense of Mississippi State. It's funny, but like the last two jobs Mike Leach has had, they've had some good defenses. The best defense Alex Grinch ever had was the one he had for Mike Leach at Washington State.
Hercules, you know? Mike's the alpha, man. And,
yeah.
Was Deion Buchanan on that team? I think he might have been.
I think so. But in the defense this year they had was really salty. I mean, it really yes. was.
Yeah.
So, and also you get nothing out of beating Mississippi State. Nobody cares about Mississippi State. I'm not saying that to be disrespectful, but like from a recruiting national perception standpoint, nobody cares about that.
And South Carolina. We know South Carolina's, you know, they have the little NIL stuff behind the scenes too. Yeah. So anytime you meet one of those teams, they're flawed a little bit.
Against South Carolina for recruits this yes. cycle. I've yeah. never heard Mississippi State's name mentioned with any recruits. Mm-hmm. And I think the final point is to your point, Ryan. I think the buzz that South Carolina would have going into the game, blowing out Tennessee and then beating Clemson on the road.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, well, you know, did that diminish your thoughts on Clemson? Somebody asked that, and it's a fair question. I don't think it does. But you now go beat the team or even pound the team that beat them. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, I mean,
yep.
and it's an SEC win. It's never bad to get an SEC win. There are just some SEC teams that no one's going to care if Notre Dame beats Kentucky. No one's going to care if they beat Mississippi State. Ole Miss or South Carolina, people would care a lot more about those, in my opinion. Brent Key asks, Brian, which coach needs to be put on notice, Al Washington or Al Golden? Perhaps we lost Keon because Freeman and our D-line coach recruited him and circumstances change. Any thoughts? There's a lot of circumstances that change with Keon, but I don't mm-hmm. think you can just dismiss Al Washington's role because he needed to do, you know, fight to keep him. And he talked to him, but like, I don't think he did enough there. I don't think Al Golden did enough there. It's blame to go around for the Keon situation. And some of it they could control. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, honestly, I don't know about put on notice. You know, I use that kind of roughly. I don't know if I would put it directly. I don't think – everybody focuses on Tommy Rees. I was not blown away with the job Al Golden did this year. I think they relied on defense of talent a lot this year as really good players. And I think the biggest issue that I have, Ryan, that concerns me is Al Golden has not shown the ability against good teams to be able to stop the pass and not get gashed by the run or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that against Marshall. They had a very defensive pass game-oriented game plan, which I thought was a mistake, and that allowed Marshall to run all over them. They had a great game plan to shut down Ohio State's offensive pass game. And once Ryan Day figured out we can run on them, they couldn't do anything about it. And we saw the same thing at USC. And the lack of adjustments all year was troubling. Mm-hmm. Like, if this game plan was good coming in, they were good. And the games that they won against those teams, like North Carolina, North Carolina ended up not being a great running team, as we found out when the competition upped. They also just dominated them in the trenches. It wasn't necessarily the game plan per se. So I have some concerns, to be honest with you, about that. And now, look, statistically, they did some really nice things, but they never had a great game. They had a lot of really good games, but no great games until what, BC, who's mess.
Bad. Yeah.
So I have some concerns there. I'm not saying I'm moving on or firing people. I'm not doing that. I'm saying, like, they're, you can't just keep doing what you're doing. And you have to be willing to address the fact that the worst position group on this roster for the entire, for on the defense for the entire season, with the exception of a couple games, was linebacker. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore that. Yeah. Yes, Al Washington did a great job this year. But he did a good job. And I think at times, Al Washington was somewhat hindered, and his group was hindered by a game plan that didn't turn them loose. They were being used to occupy blockers for the blitzers that weren't getting home. Mm-hmm. So I think Al Golden at the top is really where my conversation would be about. We need to get a lot better. We need to get a lot better. I like what he does. Here's the problem. I said all that to say this. Mm-hmm. I believe the problem is he had too much of an NFL focus. In the NFL, teams just don't run enough to really scare you. The run game for a lot of teams is just a little minor compliment to the pass game. And in college football, it's a different animal. If you can shut down a team's pass game in the NFL, you're going to win more often than not. I mean, other than what, the Titans, there's a couple teams that are starting to run a little bit more, Ryan, but for the most part, like, if you shut down Sean McVay's pass game, you're probably going to beat the Rams. I mean, am I wrong?
Well, you this know, year, because the Rams are awful.
Right.
Really bad this year.
But, I mean, that's what Bill Belichick did to him in the Super Bowl a few years ago, too. He just didn't let him throw on him, and then they had nothing to go with. So my point is, that's with a lot of teams. If you can, if Pat Mahomes has a bad game, Rams have, or the Chiefs have a tough time winning. Mm-hmm. So that's not true in college football for most teams. It's not. And so I think that there was too much of an NFL thought process to this. Hey, we got to shut down the pass game. Okay, great. You shut down Marshall's pass game and they ran for over 200 yards on you and beat you. Great. But you didn't give up a lot of pass yards. You kept CJ Stroud in check. Yeah, but they ran it down your throat for a quarter and a half and won the football game. Hey, Caleb Williams had one of his least productive passing games of the season. Okay, but he rushed for 3 touchdowns and the team rushed for 200 and you lost. Right. I mean, that's college football, man. And just that was problematic for me. Right? It was really problematic for me.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the injuries that you can point to for the offense. They didn't lose Avery Davis type, in my view. I don't think anyway. Jacob Lacey quit, but he played 9 snaps the game before he left. They weren't using him.
Yep.
Right. Now you could argue that's a problem, but they weren't using him, you know. So I just, for me, I just, I wasn't in love with what I saw. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in love with what I saw. Thoughts?
I mean, we talked about it, right? Like, I think that there's a hierarchy to coaching, right? So if the team's not playing well, you start from the top up, you say, is it a head coach the issue? If you're looking at growth that we talked about with Marcus Freeman and him turning the corner, it seems, and taking control of his program and seem to go in the right direction, well, then my next step is the offensive and defensive coordinators, right? Because they're in charge of their side of the football. If there is an issue with the schematic approach to the defense, if they're asking players to do things that they're not good at, because we talked about this with the Al Golden situation, right? The linebackers the year before were not as bad as they were this year, and they were the same dudes, and they seem to regress. So when that happens, my immediate thought process is there must be something there with the coordinator spots that you take a look at. But it keeps trickling down for me, Brian, right? So I think that for Al Washington specifically, I think some guys definitely didn't make big jumps forward. I think there were some regressions in some spots. He's a guy that I would have very close eyes on moving forward. There's no doubt. I do think that there are some things, though, where you can say, to your point, where the defensive line used correctly all the time. That's not really out on Al Washington. That's a scheme thing, right? That's a defensive coordinator's options to use a defensive line specifically. I'll look at him with the rotation of the defensive line for sure. I'll look with him and say, why was Isaiah Foskey a really good player last year and he was still just a really good player this year? Why wasn't he elite? Why wasn't he one of the best in college football? That's the stuff I looked at. So Al Washington, I would definitely have an eye on. But to your point, I do think that there were several games. You talked about Marshall. We'll talk about Ohio State from a run defense perspective in the second half. You talk about USC from a run defense perspective, where I feel like the defensive game plan was not up to snuff. You talk about Navy, right? Like, I was at the Navy game where in the second half there were just no adjustments to stopping the triple option. And so, I mean, there's instances where I would say, for me, I have a very close eye on Al Golden moving forward, and I have an eye on Al Washington as well, because I think both of them showed that there were some things to be There's a couple red flags that pop up a little bit with that situation.
Yep. Sure. And recruiting. Like, how often do you hear Al Golden's name with recruits? Not often. Not often. All right. We got a few more. We got to get out of here. Ryan and Brian, I don't think we need another transfer quarterback. Let's roll with who we have and look at getting wideouts and D linemen and edge players in the portal. I'm just going to say this. We will discuss this more in detail tomorrow. The reason that I think quarterback is there, and again, we'll dive into this tomorrow. The big reason why, Ryan, is you can't go into next year with your current group. And number one, I love Kenny Minchie. I don't want a freshman quarterback to have to start unless he's a Trevor Lawrence.
Yep.
And Kenny Minchie's a really good player. He's not Trevor Lawrence. You know who else is not Trevor Lawrence? Every other quarterback in the 2023 class.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe everybody knows I love Tyler Buckner's health, but you cannot dismiss the lack of development that injuries and COVID have cost him over the last 5 years. You can't. Yep. He's played one full season of football as a quarterback in 5 years. You can't ignore that. And Drew Pine is a nice kid and a solid player, but that's who he is this year. And as we saw, it's not good enough. So I think you need competition. Now, if Tyler Buckner beats that kid out, great. That means he's going to be a dude next year. And I got full faith that he's got the physical talent. But what if he's a dude and gets hurt in third game again because of the style of play he has? This is a kid who's had two major season-ending injuries, one lower body, one upper body. That's problematic for me. You can't assume he's going to be perfectly fine next year. That'd be poor roster management, in my opinion. So I do think you need to go to the portal for another quarterback. I do. And Steve Angeli, nice kid, but I think this team has a chance to compete if they can make a couple tweaks and some guys come back that I hope and think are going to come back. This team's going to have a chance to compete for championship next year. I truly believe that. I could be wrong, but I truly believe that. The one position I'm most worried about keeping that from happening is quarterback for a host of reasons, not just talent, but injury history and all that kind of stuff. So I want as many talented guys in that room as possible and then let the best man win.
I mean, don't you at least want insurance at the quarterback position, right? I mean, you can't put all your eggs into Tyler Buckner's basket next year. You can't put all your eggs into Kenny Minchie's basket. I think that both have a chance to be good if Tyler Buckner could stay healthy, I still think he could be a good player. I think that Kenny Minchie could be a really good player on the next level. But the worst case scenario is that you get a transfer quarterback, he gets beat out, and he's a good insurance backup. I mean, I don't think that there's a big risk to bring in another quarterback. I just,
You got to bring in the right guy.
Sure.
Like for me, Jeff Sims is not that guy. You know, could Cade McNamara be that guy? Yeah, because if Cade wins the job, you've got a steady game manager that showed that if you put talent around him and a really good run game and a really good offensive line and a really good defense, he can do what? He can take you to the playoff, right? Okay. But if he's not the guy, that means he got beat out by a pretty good quarterback and that you're going to be even better. That would be the floor for me, right? Like if he's not Cade McNamara better, I don't want him, in my opinion. I'm not just bringing I wanted a depth quarterback last year, but I wanted Tyler to be the guy. This year, it's a different deal. It's you're bringing a guy that can compete for the starting job and compete to help you win championships for me. And there are a couple guys in the portal that have some potential for that, which we'll talk about later. And then there's a couple other guys that I hope jump in the portal that become that guy. All right, last couple questions. We have a super chat here from BDA King. It's not just the bowl game itself Mayer needs to worry about. A lot of more practices before the game, too. Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm coming from, BDA. I mean, it's just one of those things where would I love it for that we live in an era where you see the thing through? Yeah, I would love that. I think that's the ideal for me. You made a commitment, you see it through. But I also understand that's not where we are. And Michael Mayer is one of those kids that I feel has given the program everything he has. And I would understand it. Like, I look at his situation a whole lot differently than I do Kyle Hamilton's last year, who I think quit on his team. I believe that. No one's going to convince me otherwise. I do not feel that way about Michael Mayer. The polar opposite. I didn't feel that way about Kyron Williams. I understood why Kyron was banged up all year. He put his heart and soul into every single snap he took at Notre Dame, his whole career, especially last year. I understood he had to make a business decision. I get it. I don't like it as a rule big picture, but I'm not going to punish a kid's decision for doing what the current system allows him to do or advocates for him to do. I'm going to push back against the system, but also support a player's decision to make that decision, because that's the world we live in now. We have a super chat from Lucas Deason, and these are the last couple things, and we're going to get out of here, and kind of get to there. Got some things I got to get taken care of here. Super chat here from Lucas. Tanner McKee and Elijah Higgins combination. I would look at Tanner McKee if he entered the portal. Elijah Higgins is a nice player. I like Elijah Higgins, but I don't think there's the fit or the need at Notre Dame. I think Deon Colsey kind of does a lot of what you're going to ask him to do. The tight ends at Notre Dame do a lot of what you ask Elijah Higgins to do. I would be fine. If you're going to get a receiver, get a shifty guy, get a route runner, get an after the catch guy. I don't necessarily need a 6'4" guy that can run. And Elijah Higgins is not really a runner. He's more of like an H-back, honestly, in what Notre Dame would do. And I just don't see the need. Very good player. But again, a lot of this, as I said, is about fit. How's a guy going to fit on your current roster? There's some guys that I look at in the portal, that's a really good football player. Would you take him? No, because the fit's not there. The need's not there. And that's how I'd feel about Elijah Higgins. McKee, a little different story if he entered the portal. But right now he's not in the portal, so it really doesn't matter. And then Garth Cassidy with the last one. Ryan, do you think our starting defensive line next year could be Nana, Cross, Aiden, Kiana'ana, and Mills? No, not at all. A couple things here. Number one is I would have Rubio in there at nose over Aiden. Number two, you're going to have a hard time getting after the quarterback with that group. You got two big ends and two defensive tackles in your starting lineup. And I just don't think that would make a lot. Now, if could you do that against Navy? Could you do that if there's a team that's like a power, like a Wisconsin? Maybe. But you're going to need somebody who can get after the quarterback a little bit. So in that situation, you know, if you want to move Mills inside and have Mills and Cross and then Rubio and Aiden be your runners, your rotation guys, okay, I can live with that a little bit. But you're going to need somebody else on the edge that can get after the quarterback. And I just don't see anybody that you know, Riley Mills, probably your best pass rusher on the outside. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see how that pans out. I don't think there's enough disruptiveness in that group, Garth. But I mean, look, those are four of your more proven players coming back. So I understand the question. It just not seeing that right now. So anyway, that's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank everybody for being with us today. Really enjoyed that show. We'll be back. Tonight, Sean Stiers in about an hour and a half. We'll have a IB Nation Sports Talk show tonight at 6:00. And then, of course, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. So we'll do a show. We're going to kind of look at the portal. What are some of the needs that Notre Dame has in the portal? What are some of the positions they should look at? Where are the priority lists at the portal? We'll talk about why Notre Dame has to look at the portal differently. We'll talk about Notre Dame's portal philosophy. And then we'll talk about some specific guys that are in the portal that we like. And so that's what we will do tomorrow. So anyway, for the rest of the team, I appreciate y'all very much. Hit that like button, everybody. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Sign up for the message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. Make sure you're checking out our website at irishbreakdown.com, our main website. All of our content at irishbreakdown.com is free, so you definitely want to check that out. All of our articles, all of our news. And of course, if you are listening via podcast platform, we would love it if you give us a 5-star review. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the CFB Nation podcast channel and the YouTube channel, if you haven't already. So for the rest of the crew at Irish Breakdown, thank you all for being with us today. We will talk to you again very soon on the Irish Breakdown podcast.